Your career is very much in full flight right now. In fact, literally, you fly, I think, 116,000 miles a year.
Yeah, I'm trying to keep my status, but it's hard.
And your schedule here in Iowa is jam-packed. You're to give a lecture tonight at the Voxman Music Building at 5:30, the part of the Creative Matters Lecture Series. Anyone in Iowa City, I strongly encourage you to attend, but we're really grateful and honored that you could take a moment to stop by our studio.
Thank you. My pleasure.
You've said that the words you want to associate with classical music and the symphony are access and inclusion. Could you say more about that?
Well, I think that growing up and in a musical family, my parents were both professional musicians, and having the opportunity to learn musical instruments as a child, I played the piano first, and I was terrible at it. I hated the piano. And then I gravitated toward the violin, and I fell in love with that instrument. And, you know, having this opportunity really enabled me to develop a lot of skill sets that became extremely essential, and not just in terms of musical knowledge and musical application, but in terms of life lessons, things like, you know, learning how to motivate myself to practice every day, and that in order to excel at something, you have to devote yourself to it consistently, and that progress is never a straight line. And, you know, then working with other kids, you know, you learn that you have to listen, you have to work as a team. And I think playing an instrument is it's a wonderful way to build self-esteem. So I really believe that every child should have access to this. I don't believe every human being needs to be a professional musician, but I think having this opportunity as a young person really enriches a young person's life and gives them skills that they can use throughout their lives in any discipline.
You've put that to a really wonderful application in Baltimore. You arrived at Baltimore, and you're the new conductor there, and you got the musicians to buy in and many parts of the community to a program called Orchids, where they are mentoring and teaching music to kids in low-income neighborhoods in Baltimore. And it's gone from like 30 kids in the first year, which is something like 600 now. Around,
no, 1,300 now.
1,300.
Right? Yeah.
Well,
that's wonderful.
Tell us about that.
Well, you know, I think part of my motivation, besides this idea of access for everyone, regardless of one's economic background and capacity, I think that, you know, when we look at orchestras around the world, they don't really reflect the diversity of our communities. And so it was also part of my motivation was to look a decade or a generation or two down the road to see how we can reflect our communities on stage as well as off stage. And I think the only way to do that is to give kids this opportunity. And it, you know, we had no idea whether it would work or if kids would be interested, but as it's turned out, they love it. And, you know, they travel, and two of our kids went to Italy last summer. I was like, oh, I didn't go to Italy. And well over 30 of them went to Interlaken last summer. 15 are now in the Baltimore School for the Arts. And the kids are, they've grown so beautifully into themselves. And I think music has been an important part of that growth.
One of the things that I feel about classical music is it's a very exciting moment in it in terms of redefining what a classical orchestra is, redefining what the classical repertory is. Nobody has done more with that than you, and I understand you've started a new music festival in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm. We started a new music festival last summer, last June, and we're continuing with our second annual new music festival this coming July. And, you know, I think Baltimore is an unusual place, but maybe I feel that way about every community. You know, it's each community is so special unto itself. And for the first inaugural season, we had 2,200 people turn out to listen to new music and hear from the composers and, you know, eat food from the food trucks. And, you know, we try to make the presentation as engaging and as fun as we feel the music is. And having the living composers there is an important part of that. For me, as the former music director at the Cabrillo Music Festival, where I was for 25 years, you know, I really learned how to build a successful contemporary music festival by engaging all the constituents in the creative process. You know, I think that's one of the important things celebrated here at the university is this idea of creativity. And so that's why I'm extremely honored to be here today to be giving this talk as well.
Oh, thank you so much. One of the things I've noticed about that, the way you won people over to the Orchids program and many of the other things you've done, is conducting is a kind of a metaphor for all kinds of things in society, and orchestras are, and one of them is the nature of leadership in the modern world, and nature of community. Could you say more about that?
Well, you know, people often ask me, what does the conductor really do? And, well, it still is a little bit of a mystery, I think, to everyone. Yeah. I think it is about leadership, and it's about commitment to the creative mind, the creative power. As the conductor, really, I'm the messenger of the composer. But it's like any strong leader has a mandate, a message, a raison d'etre. And I think, you know, that's what we do. We try to embody the composer and bring his or her notes to life through the musicians to the audience. And the musicians are the musicians I work with, and I mean all musicians, that the one thing they want is to be the best they can be. And they strive always for perfection, which is unattainable. So it's a never-ending quest that we're all involved in. And, you know, the concerts only come to life when we reach out to a broader community. And each concert is different because of each person in attendance. You know, the way they breathe, the way they cough, the way they listen, the way they focus. It really changes the outcome of the concert. So this is, I think live music is a real study in community and the power of humanity.
I was telling a friend that I was going to interview you, and a couple things that my friend said is, wait a second, people have actually made gender an issue in the 21st century, really? And he also said, I bet she'd be really grateful if she had a whole interview without that topic coming up.
Yeah, too late.
Less too late. Yeah, it still seems like it's not quite not a thing yet, but it almost is. Do you feel we've reached a tipping point? Do you feel things have changed?
No.
No.
I mean, to be perfectly blunt, I think there's a glimmer of hope. But, you know, with all progressive movements, particularly movements that are about equality, there are steps forward and then there are many steps backward because people are afraid. And I think it's all about becoming comfortable with a new norm. And I don't think we see enough women in leadership positions in our world to be super comfortable with that yet. But I have hope now that maybe we'll get there. But I think as women leaders, we have to be vigilant and not ever give up trying to create an equal landscape for people of talent, you know, regardless of one's gender. I try to create as many opportunities as I can for young women and young men, because talent shouldn't be kept out simply because of a fact like a gender or race or anything like that. So I don't know. I'm always of two minds about talking about this, the woman issue, because it really is just a fact of, you know, being born this way. I did nothing to achieve this. So I feel that it's almost ludicrous to have that epithet. It doesn't really hold much value to me. But at the same time, it holds great value because it gives me the incredible honor of being able to speak out for people who may not have as many opportunities as I do.
And a child might see you conduct and say, I want to do that. I know many conductors say that it was seeing somebody as a child doing it, many musicians.
Sure.
And Now they can see a woman doing it. I'm pivoting here to another topic I want to speak about.
I can tell where you're going.
Leonard Bernstein. I saw him when you were nine.
Right. And because of that experience, I wanted to become a conductor. So I think that most definitely can happen and does happen.
We are offering, it's our spring pledge drive, and just today we're having a drawing for your box set on Naxos of your recordings of his, and I've been reading reviews saying it's sometimes even better than Bernstein's own. It's really very special.
Well, that's very, very kind, and he would not like to hear that at all.
But, oh, I bet.
no, but he would be proud at the same time. I know him.
He was kind of not just a great musician, great conductor, but also, like you, an educator, a mentor. You've done so much mentorships, teaching, conducting, setting up mentorships for young musicians. Could you talk about his influence in that respect?
Well, I do think that maybe it seems obvious to everyone. It's not so obvious to me. I think it was less conscious and more just growing up watching him on TV and going to young people's concerts and then watching him work with young people. And, you know, when he featured Yo-Yo Ma as a kid and Andre Watts and all these super talented young people and launched their careers, I think that got in my unconscious mind that the joy of giving back through mentoring, and it's proven to be so true that I don't think there is a greater satisfaction than giving back. And I see that with the Orc Kids in Baltimore, that the older Orc Kids, we try to set up a culture of mentoring so that the older kids teach the younger kids, and it gives them both an incredible sense of accomplishment, you know, particularly the mentoring kids.
You've been a person who's made, many things happen, including the Orchids program and something called the Rusty Musicians program.
Yeah.
And I've known people who've come back and played with your orchestra. It's a way of bringing the community in another way. Many people face doubters and naysayers and people telling them they're not the right person or giving them bad feedback, and it can discourage us. We can lose heart. Nobody has inspired me more in pushing through those than you and your example. How can people address these things?
That gives me a lot of courage. I think that, you know, I'm a great believer that the path is difficult for me. If a path is difficult for me, it's probably because it's then my job to make it easier for the next person. You know what I mean? That by struggling through these, you know, this underbrush, which I've had to do many, many times at many pivotal moments in my career, it's enabled me to, I think, articulate and become an example for either students or colleagues and try to be a resource and try to actualize a different landscape going forward, so that people don't have to struggle quite so much to get through that underbrush.
Yeah, the example that you set, and the support, it really is inspiring. And I understand you are writing a book on leadership. Is that?
Oh yeah, I'm supposed to be, but I think that's on hold right now for a little while. But the project that's on the docket right now is a documentary film called We Conduct. And this was inspired, and if you have a second, for a very short story. I was conducting in Lucerne a couple of summers ago, and an older woman in her 80s came to a master class I was doing, and she clearly knew a lot about conducting. And I chatted with her, and someone asked me, "Do you know who she is?" And I said, no. And they said, "Her name is Sylvia Kadouf." And I'd never heard the name. And as it turned out, she was the first woman to conduct the Berlin Philharmonic, the New York Philharmonic. She was Bernstein's assistant in 1966, and I never heard her name before that moment. And so I promptly got some money together and hired a video team and went to Lucerne during the year and interviewed her. And it really propelled me into trying to tell the story about women on the podium. And I hope it transcends just classical music audience, but talks about, you know, really tries to address these lost stories of women in the forefront of careers where women aren't typically seen. So that's the project I'm deeply engaged in right now. So we're about one third of the way through that.
I can't wait to see that. I should mention I've been spending the last week at my evenings going to miranalsup.com, and I have to say, I recommend it to everyone. The videos are utterly absorbing.
Oh, fantastic.
It's just a tremendous
thing.
I don't think
I've looked at it myself. I don't know. There's something about, you know, either hearing my voice on the radio or seeing myself on video that really I just want to run from the room. But maybe everybody feels that way.
Absolutely. As a radio guy, it's definitely my experience of myself. One thing about conducting is it has the opposite age curve of, say, baseball or football, where a 40-year-old baseball player is an old player. That's 40-year-old is a young conductor. Someone in their 60s is just reaching their prime.
Well, we can hope.
I am feeling very excited about what you'll be doing in the next decades. Could you tell us about things that they, we now know of one, the film. You'll be in Vienna. You'll be the Vienna Radio Symphony.
Yeah, I'm very excited about
congratulations.
Thank you. Yes, you know, and of course I'm so honored to spend time in the city that was so important to Leonard Bernstein too, Vienna.
Yeah.
So that's in the offing, and you know, this year is really a big celebration of Bernstein's centenary, and I'm looking forward to so many projects, but doing his mass next week in London with probably about 300 kids at the South Bank Center, and then curating several concerts at the Ravinia Festival with the Chicago Symphony this summer. So, you know, there are lots of incredible highlights this year. But, you know, for me, I guess ultimately I love working with my own orchestra, and the Baltimore Symphony is playing at the top of their game, and we'll be going to Europe this summer. So I'm very proud of their work, and we continue to try to push ourselves forward artistically as much as possible.
Maren Alsup, I have to take a short break in 45 seconds. If you wouldn't mind remaining for just a few more minutes.
Love to. Thank you.
That would be great. I'm speaking with Maren Alsup, who is the music director of the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra. She's the outgoing music director of the Sao Paulo Orchestra in Brazil, and she will be music director of the Vienna Radio Symphony Orchestra. She is one of the great musicians of our time, and she's speaking at Voxman Music Building at 5:30 in Iowa City. If you're anywhere near, I strongly encourage you to attend. It's free and open to the public. This is Iowa Public Radio Classical. We'll be back in a moment with Maren Alsup. And I'm speaking with Maren Alsup, the music director of the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra, soon to be music director of the Vienna Radio Symphony, and in Iowa City just for a few hours. She just arrived to give a lecture tonight at the Voxman School of Music, the recital hall. That's in downtown Iowa City, corner of Burlington and Clinton at 5:30. Strongly encourage you to attend. Maren Alsup, I know you have a busy schedule here in Iowa City, and I won't keep you much longer, but in addition to all the new music you've done, you have made, for me, one of the great modern Brahms cycles and Dvorak, and I'm going to be playing the New World Symphony later. We in Iowa somehow feel a certain, not ownership.
Sure, definitely.
And one thing I've read from you in at least two interviews is, who needs another Beethoven cycle? And yet you have done some of the most exciting Beethoven I've personally heard. I know you're doing Beethoven's Ninth with the Chicago Symphony at Ravinia. If you are taking requests, that would be something classical radio hosts would be very happy about.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm actually in talks right now about doing a recording of Beethoven cycle, so
great.
I guess I have to eat my words. There we go.
Well, there is definitely room for more, and I know you've performed it not only with many modern orchestras, but with the Orchestra of the Age of Enlightenment, a period
right.
instrument group. Could you tell us about that?
Well, that's I never expected really to work with period instruments, and for for people listening, you know, they're playing on the original instruments and or recreations of those, and so the pitch is lower, and you know, the whole experience is very, very different. But it's so much fun because you feel almost that Beethoven's, you know, could be sitting right next to you. You know, it's a recreation of that moment in time, and so hopefully I'll be doing a lot more Beethoven with the OAE.
Fantastic. Wow, that's all. That's the best answer I could have asked for. Your parents were both musicians and played in, among other things, the New York City Ballet Orchestra for 50 years. And I understand that this year you have a Balanchine Ballet in Baltimore. There's something about music making with dancers that is special. Has that been a part of your influence?
Well, I think growing up backstage at the New York City Ballet and watching George Balanchine and Jerry Robbins and these amazing artists, Robert Irving, the conductor in those days, collaborate was really a privilege to see, particularly Balanchine, who felt that all movement has to emanate from the music as opposed to the music accompanying the movement. And I'm working with a former principal dancer from New York City Ballet. She was a principal dancer when I played in the orchestra. I also played there for a few years, named Heather Watts. So we're partnering to work with the high school students at the Baltimore School for the Arts, believe it or not, to bring to life his Tchaikovsky Serenade that was the very first piece that Balanchine choreographed when he came to the United States and started his School of American Ballet.
Wow.
So it's a very, very difficult choreography. And in Baltimore, we have this amazing performing arts high school, and the dancing there is, we did a couple years ago, we did the original Martha Graham choreography to Appalachian Spring. And I mean, to say that they were 16, 17 years old, I mean, you never would have known it. I mean, they were just consummate professionals. So I'm looking forward to this collaboration and to, you know, just sort of reliving those days backstage, watching music come to life as part of a dance.
It's exciting. I do want to ask you about your relationship to one of my heroes, namely Scott Simon. I just love his radio work, and you've been a regular guest, a series called Marin on Music. I'm going to post the link on our site to the interviews. But I noticed that you have been doing Bernstein concerts with both Scott and Peter Sagal as narrators. Could you tell us about that?
Well, I just spoke with Scott. We did an interview, I think, yesterday or the day before. So, and Scott is going to be coming to Baltimore on May 5th to emcee a Bernstein tribute with me. And Peter was our narrator for Candide, and he was absolutely wonderful. I didn't ask him any questions. Wait. they're both incredible people. I know Scott, of course, much better than I do Peter. But Scott is an exceptionally brilliant thinker and just a wonderful human being. And his interests are, you know, they just span the entire spectrum. So I always enjoy working and talking with Scott. So if anybody's in the Baltimore area, May 5th, and a portion of that will be recorded for NPR.
Great. Oh, can't wait to hear that. Well, Marin Alsop, I feel that I need to let you go soon, but here's how I would like to go out. I see that later this year you'll be conducting Bernstein's Chichester Psalms at Chichester, which I hope I'm saying correctly.
Yeah, I can never say that word, though, so I'm glad you said it. I always stumble on it, so.
Yeah,
it's a tricky one.
And then I was wondering, you know, just English pronunciation.
Nope, it was perfect.
Yeah, but I have that sitting in front of me, and you'll be conducting it at the Chichester Cathedral. Well,
there
I
you
just
go. See,
stumbled
no,
on it.
No, but it was my fault. I'm sorry.
No, that's me. I'm going to play one of the movements that's mm-hmm. as part of that box set. Maybe you could pick one for us.
Oh, that's hard because, you know, you have to pick the one with the boy soprano because it's just so touching.
That's
it's the second movement.
Okay, so I'm going to play that. And certainly in a moment. But meanwhile, Maren Alsup, thank you so much for taking this time.
My pleasure. Thank you for your kind questions, too.